Our study continues in the 16th chapter of the book of Judges. We're now ready to begin at the 18th verse, and we're in the midst of the story of Samson. We're actually in the latter part of that story. Delilah has just gotten Samson to tell her what the secret of his great strength is, that he is a Nazarite, and if he should ever touch the razor to his head, then he will lose that Nazarite vow that he's made to God, and he will lose the great miraculous strength that he has that goes along with it. And in the previous lesson, we showed the great deceptiveness of Delilah. We showed how treacherous she is, how that she has done her best to betray Samson, how that she's tried everything within her power to get him to reveal this strength so that she could have the Philistines come upon him. And we've also shown how that Samson was so foolish as to continue to put up with this, so foolish as to go along with Delilah until finally, after much persistence, he did tell her what the true secret of his great strength was, and how that Delilah has made an arrangement now with the Philistines to sell Samson to them when she learns how to quell his strength. So we see here not only the sin and the folly on the part of Samson, but we also see the treachery and the deceptiveness on the part of Delilah. And this goes along with what we read in Proverbs 23, verse 27, "For a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit." And truly now Samson had fallen deep into the ditch. He had sunk to the very bottom of the pit. He had placed his trust in this untrustful woman. Here he was in the territory of the Philistines. He was surrounded by his enemy. They knew that he was their enemy. He had done them much harm in the past, and yet he places his trust, he places all of his safety, he places all of his future in the hands of this woman who has proven to be so unfaithful to him. So verse 18 says that when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come up this once, for he has showed me all his heart." So she had told them three times before to come. Each time she thought she knew what his secret was, what the secret of his strength was, and each time Samson had told her something that wasn't the truth. But now she realizes he's really told her the secret of his heart. He's leveled with her. He has told her all his heart. So she says, come up this once, for he showed me all his heart. I truly know now what the secret of his strength is. Now you're going to be able to gain him. Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought money in their hand. Now there was this deal of money. Delilah was going to be paid for what she did. It was going to be 1,100 pieces of silver for each person involved with these Philistines. And that amounted to quite a goodly sum of money. So they brought money in their hand. Money still was in the picture. There was no idea that Delilah was just going to do this for the benefit of the country, just for the benefit of the Philistines. There was money involved, and as we know, the love of money is the root of all evil, and certainly it had its part in this situation with Delilah betraying Samson. So they brought money in her hand. Verse 19, "And she made him sleep upon her knees." Now, Samson was lulled into a state of sleep. Here he was sleeping upon the knees of his mistress, of the woman who was going to ultimately be the key to his capture and his fall. And we need to know that any time we sleep, that the forces of evil are still awake. They are still working. They're still seeking some way that they can get a hold on us. And we cannot afford to allow ourselves to sleep in the presence of our enemies. We cannot allow ourselves to place our head upon the knees of the one that is going to tempt us, that is going to bring about our downfall, as Samson did here. Some think that she drugged Samson into this deep sleep. Now, this we don't know. Had he voluntarily consumed wine or a strong drink, then of course that would have also violated his Nazarite vow. But The Bible didn't say that she did drug him. He allowed himself to get into this position. He had plenty of warning beforehand. He should have known the treachery of this woman by her three previous attempts to have him captured by the Philistines. but she made him sleep upon her knees. And so she was in a position then to do what you need to do. And she called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head. So Samson lost his strength. He now had the razor put to his head, and of course this violated his position as a Nazarite. He no longer had the power of God, and this was brought about because he had told them what to do to be able to relieve him of his strength. So she caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head, and she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. She brought about this violation of the vow. Now, some could easily say, well, Samson didn't do this. Somebody else did this. And so Samson really shouldn't lose his power because he didn't do it. But old Samson allowed it to be done. Samson asked for it. Samson put him in the put himself in the position of having it done. And there's no way that Samson can be alleviated from the guilt. It is caused by Samson's folly that this thing happened. And so consequently, Samson's going to have to suffer the results of this act. His strength went from him. He no longer had the strength that he previously had. And so we see that then the Philistines are going to have a tremendous advantage over Samson now, because he cannot do unto them as he has done in the past. Verse 20, and she said, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. Now this is her fourth time to say this. It's her fourth time to give this cry. Each of the 3 previous times, she has felt that she had the answer. She's felt that she knew what it would take to rid him of his strength, but she failed because Samson didn't tell her the truth. But now, he's told her his heart. And so now she's telling something that is going to be brought to pass. The Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he awoke out of his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. Now some think that while Samson was asleep, that Delilah bound his hands so that she could test whether or not he had lost his strength. And seeing that he couldn't loose himself from these bonds, then she woke him up and called for the Philistines to come. And so Samson felt like he could just go out and shake the bonds off as before. I will go out as at other times and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. He didn't realize that the Lord had left him. And so he thought he had the same strength as before. And he's going to be surprised to realize that now things are different. Now he no longer has this great strength. He no longer has the presence of the Lord, and he no longer has the protection of the Lord. And this is so like the effect that sin has upon each and every one of us when we indulge in it. How many persons have actually sold themselves into sin? They've gone out and indulged themselves in some sort of sin that they should not have engaged in, satisfied some lust, allowed themselves to stray from the straight and narrow path of the Lord, and then when they rise up from that situation, they don't realize that the Lord has left them. They think everything just like it was as before. Everything feels the same to them. Everything seems to be the same, and they begin to say, well, this is not so bad. Really, I'm the same person that I was before. I don't think that anything has really changed that much, but they're ignorant of the fact that the Lord has left them. And so it was with Samson. He wist not that the Lord was departed from him. The Lord was no longer with Samson. Samson is going to be on his own now because he had done the things that so offended the Lord that the Lord departed from him. And so there's no miraculous vision that comes and strikes us on the head and says, ah, now the Lord has left you. We have to discover this for ourselves, that we're no longer in the good graces of God, and we no longer have his protection, and so we're at the very mercy of the world when the Lord has left us. That's the case here with Samson. And I'll tell you, the world was not going to be merciful to Samson at all. Verse 21, but the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza. Now they had probably promised Delilah that they wouldn't put him to death. And they realized that if there was any way at all that they could really hinder Samson from coming back and doing them further harm, it would be to put out his eyes and to make him blind. That's what they did. They put out his eyes. They brought him down to Gaza. the city that was one of their centers, and a city in which he had performed many of his great feats and demonstrated his power to no end. Now he was brought down to Gaza in a humble state of blindness, in a state of being shackled, in a state of having his hair shaved off, and in a state of having lost his strength and having God to depart from him. They bound him with fetters of brass. So he was well tied. He was well bound. And we could think of him as being chained. And he did grind in the prison house. That is, they used Samson for the purpose of powering their meal to grind the flour. This is probably the routine job of the prisoners. And he was one of the ones that did grind in the prison house. This was either done for the profit of the Philistines, or for the punishment of Samson, or for a combination of both. So here we see the great ruler, the great judge of Israel, the great guard of the people against the Philistines, by his own folly, by his own treachery to his Nazarite vow, he is now reduced to the state of being blind, weakened, in prison, and grinding bread for his enemies. Yet while Samson is in this condition, verse 22 says, "Howbeit, the hair of his head began to grow again after he was shaven." The hair began to grow again. Now, as we study the Bible, we find that hair on the head has been used as a sign and a symbol by God for a long time. In the New Testament, for example, a woman is told that she should have long hair. In 1 Corinthians 11, verse 6, "For if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered." Teaching there that it is a shame for a woman in the New Testament to be shorn or shaven, that is, to be cut with shears, which would be scissors, or to have the razor touched to her head. Again, in the same chapter of 1 Corinthians 11, verse 10, "For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels." The long hair is a symbol that the woman wears before the angels, showing that she is in subjection to the man. The angels expect to see this symbol upon the woman's head. And we find in the same chapter, in verse 15, "The woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering." So, a woman's long hair is a glory to her. It's given her for a covering. And in this same chapter, we also have some teaching about a man's hair. Verse 14, "Doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him?" So in the New Testament age, men are not to have long hair. Women are to have long hair. And it's a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, that is, to have her hair cut. And so hair then is a symbol to God. It's a symbol of our subjection to God. And the very first thing a person seems to want to do when they want to break out of this symbolic submission to God is, if it's a woman, they want to cut their hair. And there have been many a Christian girl, whenever she begins to mix and mingle with the world, and she begins to feel the peer pressure of those round about us who all cut their hair, then the first thing she does to show that she has broken out of her subjection to her parents and her subjection to her God is to cut her hair. And oh, what a shame this is when she cuts that natural given glory from her head that God has given her then, and that's intended to be her glory as stated in the New Testament. And oh, what a shame it is whenever she takes this sign of authority from her head because of the angels. Angels are watching and noting, and it's a shame to them when she takes this sign of authority from her head. And in this day of the New Testament church, it's an equal shame for a man to never cut his hair, for the long hair is a shame to a man. But in the days of Samson, in the days when Nazarite vow was intact, the one who had the Nazarite vow was never to touch the razor to his head while he had the vow. And so this is where Samson had his strength, was in keeping the Nazarite vow, and when he lost that by the cutting off of his hair, then he lost his strength. So as the hair of his head began to grow again after he was shaven, while he was in prison, while he was grinding the flour for his captors. And we can imagine now that Samson would have done nothing to have cut this hair now. Now he wanted to have this Nazarite vow back. He wanted to have this sign of authority back. He wanted to have his hair back. And so he let it grow. And we do not know that he completely re-established the Nazarite vow, but we do have reason to think that God forgave him and that God did, again, recognize that he was holy and pure, and that Samson did all that he could to undo his wrong before God. Verse 23, then the lords of the Philistines gathered them together for to offer a great sacrifice unto Dagon their god and to rejoice. For they said, our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hand. Now we see that the Philistines are making preparation to have a great celebration. A great celebration to their god Dagon. And it's a celebration because Samson has been delivered. Samson has been made their prisoner. And he's called the destroyer of our country, which slew many of us. And he is referred to as their enemy. And they give Dagon all the praise for this. Dagon gets the honor and the glory because Samson was so foolish as to forget his God. And so that's the way it is even today. Whenever we are so foolish as to go against the things that we know to be right, and we fall into the hands of the enemy, who's going to get the credit for it? Who's going to get the glory for it? Why, the powers of darkness will. The gods of the heathen will get all the credit for it, and our God will be left without. Our God will be left in a state of disappointment and a state of frustration because of our stupidity and our folly. And so it was with Samson. They made a great showing here of praise to their God because they had been allowed to capture Samson. And they'd only been allowed to capture Samson because of his stupidity, because of his lust, because of his weakness, which led him into sin. Verse 24, and when the people saw him, they praised their God. For they said, our God hath delivered into our hands our enemy and the destroyer of our country, which slew many of us. So just the very sight of Samson provoked them to give praise to their God. And this people, you can believe, were faithful to their God. They seemed to be more faithful to their God than Israel was to the true and living God. Now we notice here that their God was Dagon. Now Dagon originated in Babylon, but he was held in very high esteem among these Philistines. And those who have studied this have shown that Dagon had the body of a fish, but the head and upper part of a man. And some scholars say that D-A-G, Dag, stands for fish. So he was really the fish god, and a very, very prominent god of the day. It has been shown that some of the priests of the day, and even later, in deference to this god, would dress up like a fish. They would place a long flowing robe on that would resemble the body of a fish, and then they would have over their head what looked like the head of a fish. And then later, this practice degenerated to just wearing the headgear that looked like the head of a fish. And this is the very thing that the mitre that is worn by the head of the apostate church, the Pope, this mitre comes from this. It looks like the head of a fish with the mouth being open, and it's a takeoff from this god of Dagon. So we have it even among us today in that symbolic form. Nowhere in the Bible do we find where any of God's people, do we find where any of the apostles or our Savior Jesus Christ ever wore any kind of a headgear like this? The Jewish mitre was not like this at all. It was more like a turban. But this has to come from this god of Dagon because we can see the very thing worn by the ancients in their inscriptions and in the things that represent their religious symbolism. It's patterned almost right down to the very last detail today in the mitre worn by the Pope. So we have to recognize these things and realize that these come from the devil. They do not come from God. They are the forces of evil. They are the things that are opposed to the church. And though man should ignorantly and blithely go along with it and put some kind of a holy religious significance upon it, it does not make it look any better in the eyes of God. And we put ourselves in the very same position these Philistines were as they gave praise to their god Dagon and openly abused Samson and the things of the true and living God. And we must also take a lesson from the fact that Samson put himself into such a despicable condition by his sin that every time the people looked at him, when they saw him, they praised their God. To look at Samson caused people to turn away from the true and living God. It caused people to give praise to and honor to their God, to Dagon. And they said, "Our God hath delivered into our hands our enemy." They looked upon their God as having had more power than Samson had, more power than the true and living God had, and consequently, he then was praised as being their deliverer. And the same thing can happen to us today. If we live in such a way that we become a shame and a reproach to the church, if we conduct ourselves in such a way that we are no better than the heathenistic cults that are around about us, then our God's going to lose glory. Our God's going to be degraded. Our God's going to be thought badly about because of our actions and our stupidity. So then we must walk circumspectly. We must be most careful how we behave ourselves. We must do all that we can to set a good influence and to set a good example and to no wise cast a reproach upon the church, upon the people of God, and upon God himself by our actions. Let Samson be a good example for us in this area. Well, we're going to close at that point. Until next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.